News Talk 1620 WTAW. Fire Marshal William Bouse from the Bryan Fire Department is here, and we're going to spend a lot of the time connecting a recent townhome fire to some tips that a lot of folks should take advantage of.
Yes, that's right. As an investigator, I go out to a lot of these fires, and when dealing with these fires and with the victims of the fires and with the families and so on, every time I go to some of these, I often see some blessings. You know, there may be no loss of life, nobody's injured, and those are blessings that you just can't put a value on. But I also see the tragedies of folks who are looking at a great amount of material loss. Maybe they're losing most of their goods that they have. And the tragedy that I wanted to talk about tonight was one that we see quite often multiplied in the fact that they had no insurance.
And this all goes back to Sunday evening, a townhome fire south of, or right off Carter Creek, south of Calder on Dogwood Lane. It's one structure divided in half, I guess, would be the best way to describe that.
Townhomes are homes that have a common wall between them, but they're totally separate structures. And a little later on, we'll talk about the construction and how important that is. But, you know, we were going through the interview stage, and there was question about whether or not these tenants had a renter's policy. And I'm going to start sounding like an insurance salesman here in a little bit, and I'm really not trying to be. But no landlords that I know of in anywhere carry a policy on anything but their property, the building. And so if you're renting from somebody else, it's really up to you to protect your own personal goods that are in somebody else's building that you're renting. And the really, really sad thing is that more often than not, I find they don't have it. And after talking to a couple of insurance agents in preparation for today, I found out that it's super cheap for the amount of coverage. And the last agent I talked to told me he wrote three policies in about 5 minutes apiece to cover well over $10,000 worth of people's personal property each.
Do you recall the content loss from the fire on Sunday?
We have not done an inventory of that loss. Typically, when, as arson investigators, when we get past the criminal versus non-criminal intent stage, oftentimes we do not get into the details of their loss. But it's pretty obvious to an investigator when they're looking at maybe everything in the garage, a damaged car or two, losses in certain rooms. You can tell that they've lost. It's not hard to guesstimate thousands of dollars worth of lost furniture, clothing, the kids' goods. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You just have to have been somebody who's lived life long enough to go to the store a few times to be able to guesstimate that they've lost a lot in this.
Visiting with William Bouse, Deputy Fire Marshal of the City of Bryan, and in this, again, case, this was a situation where, if I recall correctly, he had the vehicles in the garage, and then other than inside the front entryway, the rest of the townhome, everything was gone, was destroyed from the fire.
There was a lot of destruction. There was a second floor right above the garage, and that second floor, from the fire making its way up the backside of the townhome, got into the second floor. The second floor fell down on the first floor, and everything above the garage also was damaged as well up through the roof of the townhome. and that included another bedroom and a whole lot of stored goods and so on like that. So there was an appreciable amount of stuff above the garage that was damaged that they lost, as well as both cars in the garage.
And then something else to bring up, too, if you can repeat what started the fire and relay those preventative measures to maybe help somebody from not having that happen to them.
It was an accidental fire. From what we've investigated, it had to do with a small propane barbecue pit that was, after they used it and went in to eat, there was ignitable stuff around it, and somehow nobody was there to witness the next step that happened, but the recently used pit was still hot, and it was just inside the garage door area there, and that's where we saw the evidence of a rekindling of goods there, combustible goods, and then it just went from there. And that garage door on those townhomes is on the back side of the townhome, and that's where the fire went on up into the second floor.
And it's a good segue you were going to bring up about the construction of the structure itself and how that prevented any losses to the adjoining townhome in that overall building.
Right. In town, well, to back up a little bit, one of the things that we do when we're not investigating fires in the fire marshal's office is day-to-day we do a lot of fire safety inspections, a lot of building inspections to make sure that they've been built and that they have the features in them compliant with the construction codes that the city's adopted. And a lot of people may think that we just have a whole lot of rules for them to follow to build things a certain way, but there's really an important purpose behind all that. And in townhomes, they are required to have what we call a firewall, and that firewall has to be constructed a certain way. Well, these townhomes had firewalls, and because of that firewall, there's basically no real damage to the townhome that is next to this townhome. There was a crack or two in the brick, and a little seepage of some smell of smoke, but that was all that made it through. And so that other townhome is virtually untouched. And that's all because that firewall was constructed according to code. Not to mention the fact that there was two rooms up at the front of the townhome that we were able to recover some goods out of for the family, and they were not completely destroyed because of the construction value of the way that the wall between any garage and the rest of the home has to be constructed to protect up to a 2-hour rating between the garage and the living space. And that wall held for quite a while, and it did help to protect a little bit of their goods up in the front of the townhome.
Got about another minute or so, and we're going to change gears real quickly because school is starting next week, and we always like to issue the reminders. Kelly McKeithen was here earlier this week about traffic, but I know the thing that we have talked about in the years I've been here is where you park and where you don't park.
That's right, and I will say that please listen to Kelly because, of course, if something happens, then you know, we're involved too. My suppression EMS guys are involved if somebody gets hit. So, and that would be another tragedy. So be very careful in school zones and slow down, and the students are back and it's more traffic. So give yourself more time to get to where you're going and let's everybody not get there safe and not get hurt. But I want to remind everybody with the more traffic, it's a little harder to find a parking place. I realize that. But there are red lines along curbs, and they're marked as a fire lane, and that fire lane is reserved for the fire and EMS emergency vehicles to park in the event that there's an emergency in that area. are around that building, and so it is a requirement that you're not to park in the fire lane, and be cognizant that you don't park in front of a fire hydrant, because then you hide that hydrant from the emergency vehicles and they can't find it if they need it because your car has blocked it and we can't access it to help others.
And that includes, even if you're in the car with the engine running, having a ladder truck trying to position itself and you as the other motorist trying to get out of the way of a ladder truck, that's not the easiest thing in the world.
Well, that's very true, and actually the state law does say not to park, place, or stand, and standing is that version of sitting there in your car with it idle, but you could leave, but you're still there. And at that second in time, you need to not be there when that vehicle comes driving up. That driver is trying to position himself, and he really doesn't have time for you to wait for you to get yourself together and get out of his way. Those are a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year reserve space for emergency vehicles only. The only exception in the state law is for some of these delivery trucks who are conducting business that are required to stop to unload things for the business, can park there only long enough to do that unload, and then they must move on. But other than that, nobody's supposed to be there.
All right, a lot of ground covered today. Appreciate the time as always.
Thank you very much.
Deputy Fire Marshal William Bouse, City of Bryan, with us on News Talk 1620 WTAW.